Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
And we're rocking. Hello. He decides to just drop in. Hey, Kyle. Welcome to the pod.
Ali, Neil, thank you, man. Excited to be on with you guys today.
Here we go. Out the gate, I'm just thrilled with your microphone. You know, we're early on. We're 20 eps, 20 eps in the can. Still doing the DIY, you know, modest stuff. But I now I'm starting to get into the place. Maybe it's a dad thing where you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, look at that gear. You know, like, oh, yeah, sweet mic, bro. You know,
I do like the mic. This is not a paid promotion, but Kyle, what's the mic? What's the brand of the mic?
That's a great question. This is a Shure mic. If you ask me the specs on it, I couldn't tell you. I just know someone that is ahead of me in the game said this was a good one to get. So yeah. You don't ask questions twice. You just say swipe and let's go.
Yeah.
That's free, by the way, Shure microphones. A Shure bet, you know? You don't have to pay marketing. You just got me.
I'm sure it works well.
Hey, now, we're dads.
Let the dads joke roll.
Ollie's got that whatever, you know, old-timey mic, and I just use the old computer speaker because I learned to project and enunciate, and that is what counts. And it's funny, my kids just finished 3 weeks at a theater camp. And they had like a big play at the end, and my son had a line. We were very nervous because he's not the performer of the two of them. My 7-year-old is really like the song and dance, show person. But you know, he was a good sport about it, and we were like, if you're lying, you know, you really have to project. You have to come out with it. And he said, no, they're going to give me a microphone. And lo and behold, they did. Because they're five. They just all held up microphones to there. And he said, maybe it's hiding behind the tree.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I like that.
And he crushed it.
That's awesome, man.
Ali Khan, I want you to introduce to our loyal listeners today's guest.
Absolutely. All right. Folks, boys and girls. What am I saying? It should be all dads at this point. I'm not sure if we're ready for our kids to be listening to World's Greatest Dad, but to our listeners, today we've got a powerhouse guest joining us. Kyle Rogers is a transformational speaker and performance coach who empowers over 20,000 people every year to pursue winning where it matters most, in life, leadership, and family. Beyond the stage and coaching, Kyle is a devoted husband to Danielle and proud dad to fourth grader Savannah and kindergartner Kyrie. Kyle is a diehard Tampa Bay Bucks fan, always has his golf clubs nearby. I mean, this is so daddy. You know what I mean? What a dad.
Yes.
Golf clubs in hand, into football. You did win that one ring. I'll give you that. You needed Tom Brady to do it. But we'll get into that in a minute. But more importantly, back to Kyle. He writes a weekly newsletter for dads to help encourage them to be the best fathers they can be. Kyle Rogers, welcome to World's Greatest Dad.
Ollie, Neil, thrilled to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Of course.
So do you want to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneer comment first?
Can we just jump in? Are you in Florida? Let's get into this.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get into all of it. Are you in Florida?
Oh, yeah. I am. I live in the Tampa Bay area.
Okay.
I've been a diehard fan since the summer we hired Tony Dungy.
Oh, okay.
So I can take you back to the Trent Dilfer, Alvin Harper tearing his ACL in preseason against the New York Jets, all those pewter power days, the Tampa 2. So we've been an official fan for a hot minute here. And,
all right. You're not a Johnny come lately who rode the coattails of Tom Brady having a little chip on his shoulder going, Yes, I can without Bill Belichick. And I have to say one thing about Neil. Do you know about the Tampa Bay? It's in Florida. I know you know about Florida. You know, I'm sure you know it's like the escape
of course,
New York
yes.
winters.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tampa Bay famously.
Oh, right.
What's
America's big toe?
Yeah, I guess I never thought of that.
I don't know. I'm from New Jersey, and I remember growing up they called it America's armpit. And I don't think that was a kind thing people were saying.
You know what's weird? I heard that about New Jersey. They're like, oh, yeah, New Jersey's the armpit of America.
It's just rude. Yeah. It's rude. I'll tell you why it's rude, because my wife is from New Jersey. So I can't let that comment go. Not that you guys said it, but no, great things come out of New Jersey.
Hello.
There you go.
And, you know, and your wife, where in New Jersey does she hail from?
She grew up in Union, which is about 15 minutes outside of Newark.
Cool.
Yeah, Rutgers graduate, so shout out to the Scarlet Knights, huh?
Wow, look at that. Right. North Jersey, not to be confused with the rest of the state, which just isn't the same thing. You know, my wife's from Philadelphia, so I know about that part of Jersey, the shore. Yep. Used to go there every summer.
We're just talking about the geography of our spouses. No, I wanted to steer it away from football because, Kyle, I you know, don't care for sports. And what I mean by that is it's not true. I am the fair weather fan. Once the headlines are broad enough that, you know, someone's hosting Saturday Night Live, or, you know, is dating a famous supermodel, I'm like, okay, I can buy in. Other than that, it's so many numbers and so many teams and games, and I'm busy, you know, I can't keep
up. I'm busy. Right. I got stuff to do.
Baseball games, granted, I know there's less football games, but still, 16 times what, you know, 20 teams, it's too much. And so I prefer, I always heard me say, you know, if there's a storyline, like that's why I love the Mighty Ducks. That's why I love Space Jam, you know, because it's a story of perseverance and resilience, which is a good segue to some of the qualities that make us, hopefully, world's greatest dads. We got three world's greatest dads here. You know, you have said, Kyle, that being a good dad is a choice. Mm-hmm. And even if you didn't see, you know, the model of what being a good dad was in your home or even like in your community, like you can still make the choice to change that for your kids. That is like one of the most profound things, you know, we've read about fatherhood. And, you know, we read a lot and hear a lot about fatherhood and from lots of different people. And I just kind of want to know, how did you come up with that? I don't think you were like a teenager going, being a good dad is a choice. Like, when did that revelation come to you? What does it mean? Like, tell us all about how being a good dad is a choice.
Absolutely. You guys are well researched. I've gone through a number of different episodes here. And so you guys have interacted with so many dads on so many different levels. And the one thing that we have in common is that all of us are showing up to each other's lives about 45 minutes late to the movie. We're trying to figure out who's the main character, what's the plot, who's the villain, and how do we overcome the adversity that's in front of us. And so the question you asked, Neil, really goes back to my dad's story. My father was born, and when he was born, his father...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Was 50 years old. I was just not in a healthy place at that point in their relationship with his wife, which was my grandmother. And so he was a father who lived in the home, but not emotionally present and available. And so as a result, my dad grew up without a dad investing in his life, taking him to games, teaching him how to throw the ball, hugging and kissing him, you know, the things that we look to as world's greatest dads. And so as my dad grew up, he decided I'm going to give the family that I have something that I did not receive myself. And so healing from bitterness, healing from anger, he took the next step and just said, hey, I'm going to be a present and available dad. And so my experience being raised by Dwight Rogers was the complete opposite of what he experienced growing up. So when my opportunity came nearly a decade ago to be a dad, it really was ingrained in me that this is one of the most important roles that any of us carry in an entire lifetime. And so if this is the case, then we're going to go ahead and shake off what we need to shake off. We're going to grow and heal where we need to do that. And we're going to make sure to show up and be available for our kids.
Man, you know, it's funny what you talked about. Really, I guess it's what your dad had gone through. Is something that, you know, people don't. It's hard to unpack and just say, yeah, I, you know, someone asks you about your parents, and you're supposed to go like, they're great. It was the best. There was, you know, it's just 18 years of like magical Hallmark card memories, and some things are easy and obvious to explain, like, well, my dad died young, or my mom, whatever, you know, like, but then there's things that are just a little bit more nuanced or distant or hard to process. I mean, I can tell you my mom was schizophrenic, still is, you know, so my entire life, serious mental health issues. So that the idea of like having a mom, very different for me compared to, you know, the normal kind of response, if there is such a thing, but maybe more common. But, you know, it sounds like you had a great experience with your dad. When you were about to become a dad, like, how did you feel? Because it sounds like you were coming from a good place, but at the same time, like, you know, everyone's nervous, you know, to a degree, or, you know I am. But I guess, like, knowing that there were, I feel like it was your dad's, quote, baggage, if you will, but how did you approach, you know, being a dad yourself, and maybe even just saying it like this, how do you honor the extraordinary effort your dad did to be as good of a dad he could to you without having the gift of the blueprint? Because I feel like that's a lot of, like, being a parent is so much going, well, when I was a kid, we didn't do it this way. You know, that's it. That's all it is. Forget the books. Yep. Forget great podcasts like World's Greatest Dad. You just go, no, man, when I was eight, whatever. We didn't have no car seat, or, you know what I mean? Yep. We went to the movies twice a year, you know? So tell me about that, like how you approach that.
We walked 10 miles in the snow.
10 miles in the snow, yeah. Baby. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great question. If I could go back to your first part of the question of how did I feel becoming a dad, it scared the crap out of me, man. It scared the crap out of me. You're getting presented with a child, and you are told you are to nurture, care for, teach, and lead them until they are supposed to leave your home somewhere around 18 to 21 years old. Like, that's a massive responsibility. And so I'll try to find the picture, but I literally remember sitting, looking at our daughter, Savannah, in the bassinet just hours after she was born. She's born at 1:38 in the morning, and it was probably like 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting in her room, and my hands are just like this, because I'm like, okay, I guess this is my job now. And so feeling the weight of that responsibility and that pressure, you know, for one. The second part of your question of like, how did I walk into it? I think there is a level of confidence that does show up when you have a blueprint in front of you. But the way that I approach it now that I'm learning is there is a responsibility I have to continue a legacy of life-giving, healthy fatherhood moving forward. Just because I had a good dad doesn't mean I'm just entitled to become one. Like, it's an everyday effort to sign up, to show up, and make sure that I'm plugged in, you know, to what these kids need, because they are fully dependent on us to launch them into the world as best as possible. So I go, it's a daily commitment, man. Even on the days where you got a summer cold, even on days where you got 4 hours of sleep and you're launching a new project, new podcast, whatever that is, you know, you got to keep showing up.
Yeah. And I know that, you know, you're so lucky and that you had a dad who was able to overcome that. Not everybody is, you know, and sometimes they bring the kind of their own baggage. And the fact that he was able to be emotionally available to you and your family, despite, you know, maybe not having it growing up. I also know he sacrificed a lot for you guys in terms of the hours he worked, and, you know, kind of trying to not maybe put a burden on the rest of the family. What did that teach you as a kid, and then how do you kind of look back on that as maybe you make sacrifices for your family or choose not to make certain sacrifices that he made?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. As a kid, sometimes the sacrifices felt inconvenient to me. There was a stretch of time where I don't remember seeing my dad a lot for about 18 months. He was working his way up the totem pole at a, here we go, take it back to the 80s with us fellas, at a waterbed store. He was a waterbed salesman. And so I don't remember seeing him too much for about 18 months. You know, we're a big faith-based family, so we would go to church on Sundays. He did not go with us most Sundays for a stretch of time. And so, but there were little things he did in between that helped me to stay connected to him. For example, let's say all the way back to the 80s again, he would hop on a tape recorder and he would read stories to us so that before we went to bed, my brothers and I could hit play and listen to him read us stories to go to bed. So even though he couldn't be available in that chapter because he was sacrificing time, he still made time to be able to show up for us in that capacity. And so it really stuck a seed in my mind of going, man, this is what sacrifice looks like. This is what dads do for their families, and this is what dads do with their kids. They set an example, they give of themselves, and they do it exhausted. And when you see them, they'll smile through exhaustion because they know the why they're doing it is to provide what they believe is the best life for the kids that they've been given. So that would probably be an earmark moment for me of going, even in moments of sacrifice and exhaustion, man, he continued to show up, and that's what dads do.
How old were you when he was sending you the tape recordings?
Yeah, I was between the ages of about 2.5, 3 years old and five. Yep, and wow, so there's only about a 3.5 year difference.
Yeah, but remember those tape recordings too. I mean, that's got to be absolutely so profound, like, to hear your dad's voice in an era where we aren't media saturated. I mean, my God, like, I was away a couple years ago, and I was at an awards ceremony, and then all of a sudden my phone rings FaceTime. And I'm like, what is this? And it's just my son, like, calling me. You know what I mean? He can have that instant thing. Yes. But, yeah, that's almost like, I feel like I'm watching, like, The Lives of Others. You know what I mean? It feels like an independent film.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It's so dramatic. I guess.
Yes.
But yep. It's something. Have you ever had to do anything like that? You travel. You're a motivational mm-hmm. speaker for your kids, mm-hmm. where you have to maybe do you spend your own time doing that kind of like thing, making your own tape recording, if you will.
1,000%. I have a rule of thumb. I probably travel once or twice a month related to work. And I have a rule of thumb with the kids. I go, you can call me anytime. Call me whenever you want. As long as my phone is with me and the ringer is on, I'm picking up. And so inevitably, there's moments where I'm getting ready to walk out on stage to go and deliver either a message at a church or a keynote. And their little faces will pop up right on the phone and they'll want to talk to dad. There was another moment I was in the sound check getting ready to speak. And my daughter just wanted to sit on FaceTime with me in sound check. And so one of the volunteers who was there was gracious enough just to hold the phone there so that Savannah could see the entirety of the sound check, but it's just wanting to be present, you know, with dad. I remember about a year after Savannah was born, there was sacrifice that I got a chance to make where we were looking to knock out some of our consumer debt in preparation for where we were headed as a family financially. And so I, in addition to working full time, I Ubered as well. And I remember that New Year's Eve of Ubering until everybody got to the club, coming home and celebrating the ball dropping, you know, with the family, and then getting back in the SUV and going back out and Ubering some drunk folks wherever they needed to go. Because we just knew that's a hot night, you know, for people that are looking to get a ride. So it's just those moments, but I can't, to be candid with you, when I hopped in the car, I go, man, I'm doing what my dad did. I know what to do because I watched my dad do it. And so now it's my opportunity to be able to carry that out.
You know, you hear a story like that and, you know, it's quite clear that you had the gift of having a great relationship with your dad, but your dad didn't have that. And you also experienced it a bit because you were his grandson. What was that like? Because that's so stark, having the dad that you had, but then also beating mm-hmm. your grandfather. What were those memories? What do those memories conjure up for you?
That's a great question, Ali. I didn't get a chance to mention earlier, so let's put some pieces together and give context. Both of my grandfathers were dead before my parents got married. And so I'm learning about my grandfather's secondhand from other people's insights. Fun story. My mother-in-law knew my grandfather because she and my dad were friends a long time ago. And so literally, I married my dad's best friend's daughter. And so we go, it's an arranged marriage and I'm okay with it. however, there are moments where she'll share one of the things that she gifted to me that I always appreciate is just the funeral program from my grandfather's funeral. And the fun part is the older I get, the more I feel like I understand where he came from because I'm around people that maybe come from the background that he came from. He's a hardworking man. He carried many different jobs to provide for the family. He was also a guy who was adopted. And so I don't know what the emotional tension was for him going through those experiences. I just know being a first generation homeowner, being adopted, working multiple jobs, being an entrepreneur, there were a lot of different things that he went through that the older I get, the more I go, I can get why he may have ended up that way if he handled different things in an unhealthy manner. And so watching my dad now outlive the age where my grandfather was when he died, listening to the wisdom, listening to the experience, listening to the spots where he's forgiven, grown, or gone, no, I'm just going to go a completely opposite direction. These things are precious, man. I hold them close to the heart.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, you know, it is interesting, you know, and we don't talk about it a ton here, but I guess it's kind of the subtext for just all of fatherhood. We actually, we had on an author who wrote a book about fatherhood and the history of fatherhood but you know, like thousands and thousands of years from like a historical perspective. And I think, you know, oftentimes we're really just talking about like us, our kids, maybe our parents, rarely our grandparents, and then not even further back than that. I think about, you know, my own grandfather on my dad's side, you know, was became, you know, grew up in an orphanage, you know, had a similarly like even more emotionally disconnected father, because this is a person from, you know, from Poland who, you know, didn't really speak English, and, you know, people were just trying to make it financially. And then when his wife died, put, you know, my grandfather and his brother in an orphanage, and then he went off to fight in World War II and just had kind of like, and then worked nights and had kind of this hard knock life that then my boomer dad had by comparison, you know, living in the suburbs in the 60s and 70s. And it is interesting, you know, how like, compared to that upbringing, you know, there was some affection in the home, but certainly more in mine as a child. And then I want to believe even more in ours for our kid. And, you know, like, how do you look at, you know, I don't even know if it's like breaking generational patterns so much as it is just like learning from the past and kind of like expanding the love, you know, over time, you know, because I think we have this tendency to like, say like we want to do it better than our parents, but maybe it's not about better, it's just about growth and building on it. I don't know. Wait, is any of what I'm throwing down hitting for you?
Oh, it's Kyle? resonating, because I go, Neil, I don't know if it's always about doing better as much as it is just taking a next step. Like, the responsibility I have as a dad is just to take the next step. So although I had a phenomenal experience, you know, growing up, my parents did the best that they could with the information that they knew. So, give you an example. I graduated high school, left home 2 weeks after I graduated high school, and the day before I left to go to college, I got my first cell phone. Well, when you get a cell phone the day before you leave to go to college, you have no clue the level of responsibility that goes in. And this was, you know, if any of the kids, Ali, you mentioned it earlier, if any of the boys and girls or the kids are watching, there was a day where the minutes were not free until 9 o'clock nights and weekends. You know, well, your boy was just going ahead and calling people, texting people left and right. So before you know it, the whole cell phone bill is through the roof. And I have no clue of what the level of responsibility is for that. And so we look back now. I'm the oldest kid, by the way, the oldest three. And so we look back now and we go, hey, my parents have said multiple times, hey, Kyle, you were the guinea pig. We're sorry we missed it on some of these things. And so now my responsibility is to begin to help introduce some of these things, you know, to our kids, not to do better than, just to take a next step. I was given a foundation, but now it's time to put another level of on the building, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I've got two brothers. So I'm 40. My middle brother is 37 and my youngest brother's 36. Their birthdays are a little bit later on this year. So two siblings, we did everything together and we are close to this day.
Yeah. Kyle, when's your birthday?
March 27th.
Okay. May 9th, 85. So we're,
there you go. We're peers. Sticking together, man. Yes, sir.
Class of 03 high school.
Class of 03. Proud to be.
My God. 03. That's fine. That's totally fine.
It's all Ollie, right. You were what, Ollie, just a couple Ollie, of years before, right?
Ollie looks at us like we're like these, you know, young toddlers. Meanwhile, I walk around my neighborhood in Brooklyn, and I'm fully 20 years older than everyone hanging out at these restaurants and bars. So,
yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that goes without saying. I mean, right. Duh, I could have told you that. You're an old man in Brooklyn.
I know. I know.
I mean, I'm deep into the, you know, I think that what is kind of like really shocking about fatherhood as one progresses is like, you know, you get better at it. You do get wiser. And also you get AARP mail. You know, and you start thinking of, and what's crazy too is a lot of that is like retirement and like life insurance and all this, like these like kind of like bigger things that are popping up. And then even just like, what's the future going to be? You know what I mean? What is like, quote, retirement? Like, I sound like one of those commercials on the Super Bowl when Tampa Bay was winning a couple years ago. You know, like, you know, absolutely. What is Fidelity has you covered for that next stage in life? You know, that's what's crazy. Yep. So do your brothers have kids, too?
My brothers do not have kids to this point. My wife and I are the only ones on both sides of the family to this point that have kids. And so the grandkids get all the attention, and we will not complain. You guys get them whatever gifts you want to get them now, because we're the ones that have to help them get the big gifts in just a few years. So,
Man, so your kids are, they got it. You know, they've got two unoccupied uncles, if you will.
There got, you go. An auntie.
Got grandparents there. I feel like, you know, and you exude positivity, but being dad is also about, you know, the fact that things don't go according to plan. That's where we come from. And world's greatest. That's
exactly right.
You know, can you talk about, like, you know, just what's it like when Kyle's in the fail zone, dad fails, you know, like, let's talk about some of the times where, you know, you're like, see, he's got the infectious laugh, the big smile, but I want to know when Kyle's up in it.
Yeah, man.
I'll go first, because I remember one time being with my one-year-old, and I was home with him for a year, not by design, but by realities, by realities, and, you know, he was losing his shit. I lost my shit. I'm screaming my head off. He's screaming his head off. And then we eventually just kind of were like, okay, where do we go from here? So let me hear your version of that. You know, like, what's, if you have them, maybe you don't. Maybe you got it all figured out.
Look, I'm a dad. I feel like you add a new story to the plate in this department at least twice a week. So, absolutely. We were just at flag football the other day. Both of our kids play flag football, just finished the season last weekend. And man, one of our kids was just having a hard time dealing with the fact that every time they get the ball, they don't score. And every time they go to pull a flag, sometimes somebody gets around them. And so they're trying to figure out how to deal with the emotions. And a little bit of our parenting style is I'm really not going to go rescue my kids most times unless they're really in trouble and really need me to step in. Because I believe that emotional development, learning how to regulate, learning how to work through adversity is insanely important. And we understand this because we come from a different era where you have to figure out how to be resilient and work through things to survive. And so one of the challenges was, man, I found myself at a spot where I was about to, like, whoop one of my kids because I was getting frustrated with the fact that they just weren't. Like I need you to, you want to look at a little kid, just go, hey, I need you to man up. I need you to woman up. It's like, no, this is not reality. So I literally looked over at my wife and said, Danielle, I'm tagging you in. I said, I have no clue what to say. I have no clue what to do, but I cannot blow it out here with our kids, and I can't blow it out here, you know, in public. So, and she was gracious enough to step in, but that's just one example of where I got it right. There've been plenty of times where I just go, man, I get it wrong. It's probably at least twice a week that I look at the kids and go, hey, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Neil, I'm sorry.
No, I just love that you're talking about the tag-in, because now we've had a few different dads talk about that. And I think probably Ali and I have done it too without even realizing, you know, part of the power of great parenting is also just knowing when to tag out and when to tag your partner in when you just need a minute. And I think that's really, really great that, like, you know, you're talking about emotional regulation and how part of teaching it is knowing when to walk away, take a breath.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think that is what we say to our kids, you know, like calm down, take a breath, take a beat. And it's really hard for them to do it. And so just the fact that, like, that's your advice is just, your advice is to, like, not address it, but address it by not addressing it, by saying, you tag in, I need a minute.
Yep.
Is so great, because that's so much more powerful. You don't have to expose the kids to just your frustration and your anger in that moment. Yeah, it's really cool.
100%. And then in moments where you do miss it, because I miss it. Sometimes I miss it bad. It's just looking at the kids and owning it and go, hey, that's not acceptable. I'm sorry. I'm going to work on it. I'm looking to get better. But even dads make mistakes, because I'm not perfect. So A, will you forgive me? And B, I believe guest recently was talking about respecting your kids. I just go, hey, I respect you enough to go, I commit to working on this behavior so that I don't cause unintentional damage to you because I'm out of control or because I just decided to react instead of respond. Even in a co-parenting situation, because I help lead a number of people that are in co-parenting scenarios, I think that's why your community matters around you as well. Because if you have other voices that can help to give insight to your kids, guidance to your kids, in moments where they can pick up where maybe you don't have it in that moment, I think that's the value of community, to where, you know, we always say it takes a village to raise kids. Well, in this case, you're going to need a village around them to be able to get it done well.
You know, it's so wild, like, just hearing some of these, like, incredible, rich words you're using that are, I think, part of the vocabulary now. Really just like processing feelings, being very candid, like speaking to your kids like you'd speak to like a professional colleague, you know what I mean? Not even like a friend.
Yeah.
And I think for myself, being a little older than you guys and having a father who was born, you know, many years before me, compared to the average, right? So he was like 41 when I was born. So, you know, like I'm trying to honor his memory because he has moved on to another plane, but like, I don't think he said sorry. You know what I mean? He didn't, he never said, well, you know, I make mistakes too, you know, like my God, not
no,
at
there
all.
Was a level of bravado. Yeah, I get that.
Oh yeah. Yep. And, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing just what a radically different era it is compared to, at least in my mind, being raised by, you know, someone who immigrated to this country from a very different part of the world. You grew up in a very, very, very different circumstance than I did. But then you brought up something that, frankly, you know, it's a huge divide. We've never talked about this on World's Greatest Dad, probably because we're talking to people who are, you know, just not because we're talking to the world's greatest dads. But this is also a no judgment zone. And this isn't so much going, do you practice this? But have you been around it and what your experiences around it? But I'm going to say it, that idea.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Like, physicalizing discipline, you know? Is that something that you guys have experienced? And again, that, you know, this is a whole new thing, and but it's a no judgment zone. And I think that's what's so important about this is like, we're here to just share or whatever. So no jokes. I'm doing everything not to do any jokes, but like, yeah,
you're just doing well, Ollie. Yeah.
I'm curious to know like what your guys' experiences are. Like, were you guys ever, did you ever get a spanking? Did you ever get slapped? Yep. What, and beyond? I'm just kind of curious because it's something we've never talked about before.
Yeah. All right, let's go. So I grew up in Black America, man. The Black community, part of the way that love gets expressed is you're going to get whooped. And now there are different levels to it, but my parents definitely believed in a level of physical discipline. However, they did not get carried away. I did not experience being abused, thankfully. And they did not, one of the earmarks of their discipline was they did not discipline us physically when they were angry. I remember them walking away. I remember us having conversations later. Now you get a spanking, you know, my dad would make sure we all understood he is the lion in the house and there's only one lion that roars here, respectfully. And I think what that did was help me to understand authority, that helped me to understand, respect. And that also helped me understand what the level chain of command, the priority level is in the house. And so they did not shy away from that. But what it did for me, it didn't create fear. And I think sometimes depending on our experiences, we think that, you know, that creates fear. What it did was it created a level of respect and a level of clarity. My experience, I'm not saying that's for everybody. But in our home now, we try to mirror some of the same stuff that we receive, specifically in the area of our kids need to know why they're experiencing discipline, why they're experiencing consequences. They need to know the why. One of the areas, again, my parents were really clear. They didn't always explain the why. because we came from a generation where, no, do it because I told you. And so while there is still a percentage of that, I go, no, I'm dad, do it because I told you. And I do know what's best in this situation. In many other, if I was to give a percentage, I would say 70%. That was 70% of the time we're explaining the why, because I need you to understand this is not just a reaction. There is something behind it. I need you to get it. I need you to get it. So I think there's a really good balance. The best thing, and I'll get out of the way here, so I don't take all the air in the room. But I think the best thing to do is constantly reiterating the unconditional love. Danielle says something that I've adopted to our kids a lot. She goes, "I will never stop loving you." And she said it from the time they were born. So now it's secondhand nature. So even when we discipline, you know, this is not our love stopping and something else taking over. This is an expression of our love because we're trying to help guide you and guard you moving forward.
Cool. Am I up?
You're up. You're up, Neil. Everyone gets up. You know,
it's apt timing because I was with a bunch of dads last night for our dad's movie club.
Okay.
We'll talk about another. We watch art films. It's okay. Ridiculous and fun, and I'm exposed to things that my basic tastes otherwise would never know.
Okay, like what's your basic taste, Neil?
I mean, like, here's what I'll say is, like, we're watching foreign films from, like, Italy and France and Australia, and when my turn comes, I'm picking Tommy Boy, all right? but so we're all sitting around before we watch the film, and we were talking about, like, who got spanked as a kid, mm-hmm. and literally all of us did, and we're all, I'm 40, as we've established, and it's, like, from me and then folks, like, probably all the way up to, like, late 40s, all of us were spanked. None of us spank our kids now. And we were literally talking about this conversation about discipline and gentle parenting and how do you discipline with words and the frustration of it. But the need for it, right? Like you can't just let your kids, not have a boundary or not have a line. But also that, you know, the recognition that like, yeah, we were all spanked. Hopefully not more than that, you know, and I think, yeah, it was very socially acceptable in the 80s and 90s, maybe to a lesser degree. And now here in the 20s, at least where we're sitting in Brooklyn, New York, it's a no-go. It's a no touching, you know, hands are for hugging, hands are for handshakes. We use our words. But yeah, it's a very interesting generational thing where, again, like, you know, as you said, like maybe it's not about doing better. It's about doing different and building on what we now know, you know?
Yeah. Neil, I will say one of the things I appreciate about how parenting has evolved, specifically leaning into gentle parenting for a moment, is it has pushed us as dads, specifically since we're on World's Greatest Dad, it's pushed us to learn how to use our words. It's pushed us to learn how to get down on one knee, look them eyeball to eyeball, and make a human connection with a growing human being. And I'll be honest with you, that's probably one of the biggest challenges to me as a dad, but it's also something I go, oh gosh, I'm so much better because I'm pushed to do it.
Love that.
To me, the big thing is explaining the why is seems to be a big common thing we all, you know, talk about now. Also, for the record, in case anyone was wondering, I remember getting the slap, you know, I think I probably got a spank. Not, it didn't happen often, but I will tell you this, what was missing in those scenarios was, it wasn't coming from an intense emotional spot. It was, you know, I mean, the shit had hit the fan. And actually I found myself too, and this is something I'm pretty mindful about. I got more of the emotional punishment, you know, the yelling and all that was by far, far more frequent and continued on and on and on. And, ironically, gave me far more scars than any physical thing could have ever done. So that's something I know in my mind I always think about with my son. But it's funny, I'm in a different era. I got a 13-year-old, yeah. So I can explain the why, and then I'll still get then we're in a debate. Okay, you know what I mean? It's yes. it's not so much like, well, I have an answer. It's like, all right, well, here we go. So I'm in a different we're in a different thing here. Yeah, yeah. I got Charlie Kirk over here. Not on the political thing, but more in the, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's going for it.
Just
he's
sitting in a chair going, yes, come to me with yeah. whatever your talking points are.
Yeah.
Let's pivot away from that, Ollie. And let's go to, I want to ask Kyle, what is Dad's Matter and yeah. what inspired you to start it?
Yeah, the inspiration to start Dad's Matter is the experience that I had growing up. And I realized that my dad to this day is the most influential man in my life. And so having his voice, having his presence, but something I realized really young is that many of my friends, people I went to school with, teammates playing baseball, basketball, on the swim team, they didn't have that same experience. And so being a dad now, I go, how do we take the conversations, the common sense, the wisdom, if you will, that's been gained and get it to those who are looking for it? Because although we're the most resource generation informationally, we need people that are going to help us to chop it up into bite-sized pieces. Go, how do I flesh this thing out in real time? And so Dads Matter for dads that believe fatherhood is not their side hustle. This is their legacy in motion. This is the thing that lasts when you are no longer here. And we want to do two things. We just want to encourage dads to gain clarity and confidence along the fatherhood journey. So there's a weekly email that hits inboxes that provides that with three thoughts from me about fatherhood, two quotes, and one question that just help you to take one next step.
That's the mission statement we need to have at our fingertips here. You know,
that's why we're talking to world's greatest dad, Kyle Rogers.
That's the way. That's true. We can always cheat off Kyle Rogers' notes. I have a fantastic.
I'll be honest
question.
With you, I might be peeking over looking at your paper as well, Ollie. So.
Oh really? All right. Well, maybe this.
Well, I mean,
one,
you know, you've got a 13-year-old. I ain't been there yet, so it's yeah. good to hear. You know what you guys are navigating, because that's the whole purpose, man. Is that conversations bring clarity, and I'm a firm believer that a lot of times you find your footing in someone else's story first. And then you figure out how to flesh it out in real time when you know, borrow the foundation and then put it together for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a little sneak peek into the future, Kyle, I can definitely tell you, in before you know it, one day you'll be driving. And the real surprise, you know what's really great? I'm going to tell you, it's great when you don't have to deal with that damn car seat. That's a really nice thing. You just plop that guy.
The best
your
day.
Guy's in shower. Oh, yeah, great. Oh man, come on! Yes. All that extra stuff. That I missed the diaper bag, but not the car seat. That was just whatever. You know, you got your guy. He's sitting shotgun with you. Something I tried to push the other day when we had a person on who used to work many years for YouTube and explained just the diabolicalness of all these huge platforms and how they keep you on the phone all the time, because my kid's always on a device. I purposefully kept him off the phone somehow. I don't know how. And we were just having a conversation. And what's really amazing is one day you're like talking to your kid like you're talking to just a full-on functioning person, you know, and we're slowly but very surely approaching, you know, we had a pretty candid conversation while watching the pilot episode of Breaking Bad, where I was just explaining to him the ins and outs of narcotics and drugs and stuff, you know what I mean? I was like, he needs to hear it, you know, and it wasn't like some serious thing. I was casually talking about it. Well, we're watching Walter White figure out how to cook. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was not the 1980s.
Heisenberg.
Yeah, yeah. Totally Heisenberg. Totally Heisenberg. Oh. And I think it's really like, it's kind of like your kid's like kind of what, really how we're all dealing with AI. You're like, whoa, you learned all this? How did you learn all this? And then you just interact like you would a person. And that's where things get pretty wild, you know? And then they're their own person. And then, see, I can't tell you anything beyond that because your kid will turn into that person. And that's who you have to contend with then, what their interests are, where their story is heading to. So that's what's going to be really crazy. It's about to become bespoke and very tailored. You just have to make sure you're listening and watching and seeing where it's going. And ultimately, I'm sure you're doing it too, but you foster their interests more than pushing your own. There's my hot take. That's my put that hot on take. A shirt, Neil. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. It's taking time to my dad would always say exactly. My dad would say you have to be a student of the people that live in your home. They're always changing, and so you have to always be paying attention. So I love that. I appreciate you sharing that.
Cool. Hey, Kyle, we talk about a lot here. We've started to ask dads, like, you know, 20 years from now, your kids are grown. They're talking about what it was like, you know, growing up with their dad. How would they describe you? Or maybe they're bringing someone home to come meet at Thanksgiving, and they're like, you know, my dad's, he's like this. Like, how do you hope that your kids describe you when they're grown?
Yep, that's a great question. I enjoy living life trying to reverse engineer things. So that question is right up my alley, Neil. I think the number one thing I'd love for my kids to be able to tell their friends and those people that they're bringing home for dinner, or maybe their potential spouse, is my dad's consistent. He's consistent. He's consistent in character, consistent in his word, consistent in what he says he does and how he does it, how he loves, you know, our mom, how he loves us. So I think consistency is a big deal. And I think when I say fun, I don't mean goofy. I mean, there's such a joy about living, even in difficult scenarios. And I go, how do we find the joy in embracing each moment? So I hope my kids say, hey, man, dad made the most of every moment. Dad made the most of the moments where 2 years ago, our daughter broke her arm 4 days before Christmas. And so for us, it's a memory of I picked her up out of the backyard, carried her to the car, got her to the emergency room, you know, the whole song and dance from there. But we just made a memory together as a family. You know, we rode around and looked at Christmas lights with the windows down, her arm perched up on a few different pillows to elevate it. But it just goes, no, you make the most of the moment. So I really hope my kids, you know, say, hey, dad made the most of every moment. He showed up in as many moments as possible, and he was consistent.
Beautiful.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do still is to hang out with my parents. And so I will randomly call them and pop in on them or find out where they are, roll up. And I really hope my kids do the same, because it's just so much joy still being connected to the people you were in the same house with, but now you're adults. So we're going to communicate as adults now. It's such a joy.
All right, I got to ask this, because it sounds like you guys live near each other. Like, if you could pop into their house, or, you know, within an hour commute, I assume, maybe, right?
Yes, you're exactly right.
So, do they do the babysitting thing? Are they the grandparents that, like, get in, roll up the sleeves and get in there? Is it like that?
Yes.
Well,
absolutely. So now here's the thing. My dad was a masterful diaper changer when I was growing up. He refused to change either one of my kids' diapers. He just goes, here you go. It's your turn. But outside of that, no, they love doing the overnight. They love spending time with the kids. They're at the flag football games. They are fully involved and fully ingrained into the kids' lives. So, yep, we're blessed to have them. My parents and also my in-laws.
Wow. Neil, do you have this luxury as far as I'm concerned?
Complicated. You know, my family's over in New Jersey, and I'm in Brooklyn, which you would think is quite close, but, you know, as far as they're concerned, we're in Siberia, because, you know, we just chose to stay in the city. I mean, we see them, but, you know, we're living in a different kind of village, Kyle, where our village is, I would say, you know, our rabbi said to us when we were getting married, there's family of origin and family of creation. And, you know, we talk about the village. We live so close to our park. I talk about the park a lot. And our kids' school is, like, right, you know, two blocks away. So, like, our, you know, other caretakers are often just like other parent friends, yeah. you know, yep. Which is not to say, you know, we have a relationship with grandparents and aunts and uncles and stuff. They're just not the go-to default kind of watchers. But you know, it works. I don't know. It's different, you know, it's, but I'm so pleased to hear kind of like how, like you're living like the dream nuclear family, expansion, I guess, you know, to kind of bring it back to your grandfather and some of your peers growing up, you know, your dad was kind of the maverick, it sounds like, breaking out of that generational pattern, kind of carving out a path of what a father can be and look like, without much of a model, I guess. And I know you do a lot of this in your work, but like, what advice would you give to dads today or expectant, you know, dads who are about to become dads, you know, dads with young kids, older kids who didn't have that example of like the superhero dad that you did, kind of coming out of nowhere, making, you know, his own way. Like if you didn't have a good example, but you're trying to be a good dad and maybe you're stumbling, like where can they look? What can they do?
It's a great question, Neil. That's probably the question that I get most often because we're all familiar with where the divorce rates have been for generations leading up to. We're all familiar with different statistics about fathers being in the home, not available, or not in the home at all. And so my first response is take a moment and make a personal decision that you are going to commit to becoming the dad that you believe your kids deserve. Like there's no trying when it comes to fatherhood. You either do it or you don't. And that audacity comes from watching my dad make that choice of I didn't have it, but I'm not going to try to do this. I am committed forever to doing it and doing it well. I think part two of that is constantly have your head on a swivel looking for resources and people that are who you want to become. You mentioned Dads Matter earlier. It's one of the reasons we do it because I go, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I think that's why we're dads. We know we ain't perfect. And that's what makes us great is that we're trying to get better every day. But it's getting around other examples that go can challenge you to become who you say you want to become. Like if I'm not doing well in discipline, or I'm not doing well with my patients, look around and go, what's a resource or who's a person that is doing well, that I can lean in, that I can glean from, so I can constantly be growing. And so the decision to be committed and then the relentless desire to be resourced and be around great mentors and coaches that are going to help you. My parents had that very similar story, Neil, where we didn't have the nuclear family close by. Our church family became that family to us, but they pointed us in the direction of those mentors and those voices as well. So I think it's possible. I think there's a lot of excuses that we can give, but it's possible if you will be relentless about going to do it.
You know, it's interesting. It's perfect timing because, you know, you had just, you know, brought up the community of your church. Between the three of us, we're all pretty much coming from three different faiths, but generally speaking, how do you think faith can play into the role of being the world's greatest dad?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ollie. I think for me, the faith that I lean into is the thing that keeps me grounded. So the principles and the values that I get from the Bible, and I realize, you know, here on this call, I love the fact that we're all coming from different places. I love the fact that the audience is all coming from different places as well. And so if you're not a faith-based individual, this does not segment or seclude you from this conversation. I think you have to have a set of values that you allow to align you and then to ground you. And for me, that's just what I get from scripture. And so every day I'm rehearsing and repeating what those values are. The reason I apologize is because that's what scripture nudges me to do. The reason why I'm patient is because this is a characteristic I'm supposed to live out. The reason why I'm available emotionally and present is because this is what scripture points me to as the priority for the kids that I've been blessed with. And so I go, what are your values? What are your priorities? And then how you execute in life has to align with the things that you've said are most important.
Yeah. We've got, just to be clear for the listeners, we've got Christianity covered in Kyle. I've got the Jewish voice over here. Ollie, what are you?
Oh, I thought we were just going to stick with miscellaneous.
Yeah. I don't know. What were you raised? Were you raised with PayPal?
Very loosely. You know, my parents are both Muslim. I didn't go to any mosque regularly. One day I was 4 and my dad said, "Come on." And I'm like, "Okay." And then all of a sudden I was like, "Wow, we're in a room. There's a sheet on the ground." And people started, you know, bending and kneeling. And that started me imitating these positions. And that's about as far as I went. I think I went, there was one time, maybe a couple years later, I was 4. So then maybe I was like, I don't know, 6th grade. And I went on Sunday to the mosque and I had to go to classes. And there was Arabic. And I remember sitting down and I had no idea what was going on. They put a book in front of me and they said, "Okay, you read that line." And I'm like, "I can't. It's in Arabic. I can't read this." And then I had the actual faith class. They had a little book. It was a colorful, like, children's book. And it said, "Islam for Younger People." And the guy who taught the class was one of my dad's friends, Dr. Madoud. Hi, doctor. He was the guy we'd go to check the old peepers out. He didn't charge. I had backdoor medicine. My dad was... That's how doctors in the 80s did. You just saw your friend. You're like, "It's fine. Don't worry. No insurance." Yeah. Really. Best healthcare plan ever is just having friends. And he asked a question. He goes, "Who's the Son of God?" I shot my hand straight in the air and I said, "Oh yeah, I know this. Jesus Christ." He's like, "No." That pretty much ended my tenure at the Islamic Center of Greater St. Louis. Did not really stick, and that was that. I did attend a service for when my dad passed away, because turns out no matter what, you're stuck with something for the big things like death. So I was back in the old mosque, still lost, still faking it. That was about 9 years ago. So yeah, yeah, that's the extent of my faith-based experiences. But all true, all true.
I was gonna say, you know, I'm curious, Kyle, your thoughts, because you know we're covering the three major religions. I know there's a lot of offshoots and variations on a theme, but we've got the three biggies covered. But obviously, you know, we're living a secular world, and there's a lot of agnostics or atheists or other, you know, religious beliefs. I mean, like, you know, do you think you, like, you're talking about a value set, you know, does it have to be thousands of years old? Can you kind of create your own value set as a dad? Like, how would you approach that, you know?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the question I'm hearing you say is, how do you establish values even if faith is not necessarily a part of your value system? Yep.
Right.
I think step one is realizing that there really isn't anything new under the sun. And so even though you're extracting values that you're going to put to work, they came from somewhere at some time. And I think the most important thing about the process is when you establish what your values are, you hold your values, but how you execute them is going to change. The method of those things is going to change over time. And so I go right back to what we talked about earlier. Who is what you desire to become? And get around them. Ask questions. Take even the approach of I'm just always going to be a student, always learning, and so I will always want to keep building along the process.
Listen, Kyle, you have been so generous with your time. Ollie's going to ask one more question.
Okay.
And then we're going to head to the lightning round.
I was going to say, please, I got to make sure to get the lightning round. I've been looking forward to this one. So, yeah.
We got you.
All right.
So, like any classic dad, you golf. You golf a lot. What? I know. I mean, like, that's so dad. That is just.
It is.
So dad.
Guilty as charged.
What has fatherhood taught you on the golf course, and then vice versa. What has the golf course taught you about being a dad?
Yeah, fatherhood on the golf course. You got to be patient. You really have to be patient. Golf is, I can't remember what golfer said it. They're in the Hall of Fame, though. They said golf is a game of misses. And how you respond from your misses determines how good or how terrible that round is. Now, that's applicable to fatherhood. Fatherhood is a life of misses. You are going to miss it. But how you respond to those misses will determine the experience that your kids have, you know, with you. Then if I was to flip it, how has golf benefited me in being a dad? Okay. Golf has benefited me being a, okay. Man, golf gives me a spot where for 5 hours, I don't have to do anything but be the guy that's swinging a golf club. Golf gives me a spot where mentally I can be disconnected from what's taking place in life. I don't have to be on. I'm not answering calls and text messages. I'm only concerned about one thing, the next shot. And I realize that when I get that, it gives me the mental reprieve and it gives me the space to be able to take a deep breath. And then when I get a chance to replenish and be at rest, everything and everyone I'm connected to experiences a better version of me in response.
You make me want to take up golf. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I think that pretty much nails that one. I think it might be time for the lightning round. Are you ready?
The lightning round.
Let's get it.
Okay, can we start doing that?
Yeah, I think we just did.
We need a soundbite for that, Neil.
Yeah. Just put it in all the edits. Here we go. Okay, all right. Dad Lightning Round, here we go. Number one. Kyle, invisibility or teleportation?
Teleportation.
Ooh, wow, he came up with that answer quick. Favorite movie to watch with your kids?
Space Jam.
Whoa, you and Neil have a lot in common already.
Which one?
Oh, the original. There's only one in my mind. No disrespect to LeBron, but there's only one. It's the one with MJ.
I'm into that. Last thing your kids broke.
Gosh. It feels like every week there's something new. Let's just say light bulb.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. That's a messy clip. I don't envy that.
Well,
one.
The footballs and basketballs are flying around the house, so.
No, fair enough. I just not cleaned up a light bulb. Sucks. Favorite book to read with your kids?
The Bible.
Okay.
Their kids' Bible. Yeah.
Yeah. Most you've paid your kid for a lost tooth?
$10.
Oh, there you go. There,
inflation. Really? Price is going up. Inflation.
$10? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, we would go out of our... I'm sorry, this one hung me up to dry. We would go out of our way to create change, which is hard in a post-pandemic world. $10. Okay, yes. Good to know. Greatest dad of all time.
My dad.
There you go. Best kid snack you always steal?
Oatmeal pies.
All right. Favorite thing to cook for your kids?
Breakfast. French toast, scrambled eggs with cheese and bacon.
I feel like cooking breakfast is a pretty... That's like a fun thing to make for the kid. You know, start of the day, you got the coffee in you. Go-to spot in Tampa for a family day out?
Family day out.
Yeah.
Man, most of ours are around sports, so I would say right now the park, but they're getting old enough for amusement parks, so I'm sure Busch Gardens is around the corner.
Okay. Yeah, you got plenty of stuff there, too. I'd definitely check out a Rays game, too. Best Cuban sandwich in Tampa is where?
Ooh. Gosh, I would have to ask my pastor because I enjoy Cubans, but he loves them, so I cannot remember the spot he goes to. Yep.
Well, where do you go? I mean, I assume you said you like them.
I like them. And honestly, they're going to judge me when this gets played, but I just go to Publix and get a Cuban from Publix or call someone that knows where the local Spanish spot is.
You know what? In the interest of defending parents everywhere, I think we all appreciate the value of a cherished grocery chain. Because I know people love Publix down in your part of the country. So I get that. What's the most dad thing in your car right now?
My golf clubs.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And our last one of the lightning round, best part about being a dad.
It's their faces when you show up for them. Yeah. There's a twinkle in their eye, man.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 4-1, right?
Kyle Rogers, you are the world's greatest dad.
It takes one to know one. Neil, Ollie, appreciate the opportunity to hang.
Sure. Thank you for being here. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
World's greatest dad. He's the world's greatest dad. Bobby Carter.